Thank you for listening to an audio recording from the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative dedicated to preserving America's history through the timeless practice of oral storytelling. To learn more about the Tell Me a Story program, including how you can add your own story to the collection, visit MidwestGenealogyCenter.org/tellmeastory. On behalf of the Midwest Genealogy Center and Mid-Continent Public Library, we hope you enjoy the following story.
Today is Thursday, February the 6th, 2020, and I'm interviewing Daniel Holt. Dan, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Marie. Thank you.
Dan, can you start with some of the background, your name again, your parents' name, and where you were born and raised?
Yes, my name is Daniel J. Holt, and my mother was Dorothy Nadine, they called her Dottie. Sellard was her last name, and my father was Donald Cleveland Holt, and I was born in North Kansas City Hospital. Was raised for most of my life in Liberty, Missouri.
So can you tell me a little bit about your background? You grew up in Liberty. Were you an only child? Did you have other siblings?
I was not. I had two older brothers. I'm the youngest. Mike and Pat were my oldest siblings. And we all served in the military. My oldest brother was actually a cook on a submarine in the Navy. And my other brother, Pat, he was a hydraulics mechanic for the U.S. Navy, and he was stationed in Puerto Rico.
And you yourself, you were in the military. What branch of service were you in?
I was. I went in to the regular Army, but right after, while I was in basic, they were shutting down Engineer Post, and then I got sent to a National Guard post. So I was in the 110th Engineer Battalion with Missouri National Guard.
And how long did you serve in the Guard?
From 1983 to 1991.
And what was your rank when you left the military?
I was an E-5 buck sergeant when
All right.
I left.
Had you done any traveling while you were in the service?
I did. I did three stints in the country of Panama and one in Honduras. Our group with the 110th Engineer Battalion was actually there and participated in Operation Just Cause, is when we captured Manuel Noriega and removed him from power in Panama.
Well, that made the news. I remember
it did.
That. Yes,
it did.
I definitely remember that. Well, tell me a little bit about your growing up. You're saying both your siblings, older siblings, were in the military. Mm-hmm. Is that why you decided to go into the military?
Yes, my father was in Korea, and my grandfather was in World War II. So it was kind of a natural progression. Our family has always served in there. I've got many nephews that have served as well. We have actually had a family member in every war in this country's history. So our family has been very giving to the military in this country, and unfortunately we've also made some sacrifices. I have two cousins on the wall, on the Vietnam Wall in Washington, D.C.
So if you were to sit down and figure out how many family members were in the service, have you calculated how many that you've had, Dan?
No, but I can, right off the top of my head, think of 10 that have been in. Some of them, probably the biggest one that comes to mind is my cousin Donnie, who's much older than me. He got drafted for Vietnam. And he was sent to Vietnam, and he is in country. He'd been in there 24 hours, and that's when the Tet Offensive happened, and which was one of the bloodiest wars and the bloodiest attacks in Vietnam. That was his welcoming to wartime. He came in the heat of it, and he stayed in until we pulled out. If you see the historic video of the ships leaving, and they end up pushing off a helicopter to make more room for refugees. He was actually on that boat. He was a U.S. Marine, and his job was to help the refugees to get as many refugees as they could aboard upon that ship when they left. He was there. He was with the last ship that left from Vietnam.
Wow, what a big piece of history.
Yeah.
Definitely. So you've had every branch of the military service. You've had a family member that's been in the Navy, the Army.
No Air Force.
No Air Force.
No. Been in the Army, been in the Navy, been in the Marines, but we have no Air Force in our family.
No one in the Air Force. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, let's go back a little bit. When you were growing up, and you had said that your older siblings was probably, and your grandfather, your father, gave you direction in as much as you always served your country.
Yep.
Tell me a little bit about your parents growing up. I know you had talked to me about the summers that you spent with your grandparents, that was a memory that you'll never forget.
Yes. In the summertime, my grandfather was a farmer in Excelsior Springs, and he would have all the grandkids come down. And it was kind of like cousin camp at the farm, and we would help our grandfather. But it wasn't just the boys. The girls would come down, too. And the girls would actually, that generation kept the girls in the house, and my grandmother would teach them how to sew and how to cook and how to do those things. And my grandfather would take us to the field and make us do chores with the cattle, and he had corn and hay, and so we would, and pigs. And of course, we all got to play with the chickens. That was kind of fun. But that was kind of where we all kind of learned our work ethic, because you got up early in the morning, and the rule was you didn't come home till dinner time. At lunch, the girls would bring lunch out to you out in the field. So that was kind of a neat memory.
Very much. How many summers did that go on? How far? How young were you, and then how old were you when your grandparents stopped having you come?
That probably started in third or fourth grade, and it stopped when I was probably, I know it was my freshman, so probably my sophomore year of high school.
Well, that was a nice, because you got to know your grandparents, and your grandparents knew all
that
the
all stopped when he had a major stroke. And that made it where he couldn't farm anymore, so he rented his land off to another farmer, and that he quit farming, and that's how that stopped.
Oh, that's too bad. Tell me a little bit about your family heritage. What is the heritage of your family?
That's interesting. My mother's side, she was a Sellard, which that's all Irish, and in fact, my mother did not marry an Irishman, and my grandfather was very upset about it because he believed that you should marry your own kind. My dad and his family, the Holt side, for years we were always told that it was German. Well, my aunt, if you remember when the show Roots came out, my aunt did a genealogy study and found out that we are actually Dutch, and that when we came to America, Michael Holt was the first guy. He actually, at Ellis Island, they removed the Z off the end of his name. Our real name is Holtz, but after he came to America, it just became Holt, and we are actually Dutch.
And what year was that your uncle came to America? Do you, in the genealogy that your aunt did, did she find it?
She did.
Was it early 1900s?
Yes, and I don't remember the actual date. He actually came over as a kind of like a indentured servant on a ship, and that he worked his way over. That's how he got passage to get to America.
Okay.
On that, and then,
did he come alone, or did he find his bride here?
No, he came alone. He came over and started the family. He actually had six kids. After he got married, he had six kids. And they spread out. They actually came in, and the first settlement of them was actually in Louisiana. And then they migrated north.
So Louisiana is where he actually came in.
Yes.
Right. That was one of the ports I noticed on ships. Well, you had touched a little bit about the military war that your uncle, he was there, the Tet Offensive?
Yep.
That was when it was heated up.
And that was actually my cousin.
Oh, your cousin,
yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you yourself, you went to Honduras.
Yes.
What was that like? Because we're talking about different nationalities, the language barrier. What was your duties and responsibilities while you were there in Honduras?
Well, we were in Combat Engineer Battalion, and our job was to rebuild structures that they had had a major hurricane down there, and that's what we did in Honduras and in Panama, was to repair damages from the hurricanes. We rebuilt some bridges, some beautiful bridges. The natural wood in Panama is actually mahogany, and so we built some of these bridges that looked like furniture. It was beautiful. In Honduras, we were building box culverts where the water came from the mountainside and had washed out roads because the storm was so sharp. Mm-hmm. We also replaced a lot of roofs and rebuilt schools, put up new walls, and replaced those for public schools. Mm-hmm. The people of Panama are amazing people. I spent more time in Panama than I did in Honduras. They are very poor as far as they have no money, mm-hmm. but they are very rich people because the jungle gives them everything. And they really don't need a lot of money. They don't need a lot of electricity. The villages work together to go out and go hunting, and they share what they get with their villages. A lot of the villages are along the ocean, and it's very seafood-based. And they are very giving people, very loving people. And they were very supportive of all the military troops that were there. And it was an honor. We were told that if we were ever asked to go and have dinner at one of their homes, to do so, because they considered that a great honor to have a foreigner in their home. And they were just the most gracious people you'd ever meet. The neatest thing was that the children of those villages, the big sport in Panama is baseball. In fact, many people do not know, but Noriega actually came to the United States to try to become a professional baseball player because baseball is so big in Panama. Well, each night when we get done working, the kids would come to us and ask us to play baseball, and it was always us against them. And the whole village would come out and watch us play baseball. And it was a real treat to play ball with the Panamanian kids.
And how long were you stationed there?
I did two stints. The first stint that we were there, we was only there for 3 weeks. Because the National Guard, they do the summer time. The second time that we were down there, they activated everybody because of Desert Storm. Desert Storm was activated in... We all got activated as well. And so we were down there, and I think that one was 2 months. I think we were down there 2 months on that one.
So how did you learn these skills, Dan? I mean, you're going there, you're talking building bridges and culverts. And
well, when you go to basic training, after you get out of basic training, they send you to combat engineer school. And so actually taught by some of the greatest tradesmen in the world. The trade schools for the U.S. Army are very, very good. And my main trade was electrician, but they cross-trained you for everything. And we were part of, I actually ran a generator. It was my full-time job. I ran a generator to support power for the bridge builders and for the carpenters. But once you got your generator running, they always need an extra hand, so you were in the middle of doing different things. So being a combat engineer is pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm. Have you been back since you've been out of the service, just as a vacation?
I haven't. I've always wanted to take a cruise ship and go down through the Panama Canal. We did visit the canal. That is some amazing engineering, if you've ever seen it, with the locks and the ponds and how you go from east to west in the morning and west to east in the afternoon. It's a pretty amazing achievement. A lot of men lost their lives in that, but when it was done, the world was a better place for it, and it's just a marvel of engineering. It's really neat.
Did you make any friends that you still have that friendship from Panama or Honduras?
Not locals, but I still have friends that I had in the service.
Okay. You know,
we still FaceTime or Facebook each other and keep up with each other.
That's nice. Do you have any reunions that you're looking forward to? That
no, we really don't have too many reunions on it. Several of the members of the 110th Engineer Battalion do live here in Liberty, so we run into each other from time to time and have lunch, have a cup of coffee, but not as a whole-scale reunion. That would be nice to do.
That would be. Well, let's touch on remembering loved ones, your grandparents. It sounds to me like they made a big part of your life, and I think that's where you get a lot of your work ethic, as you had said.
Yeah.
You're from your grandmother, understanding her role, and your grandfather understanding his role.
Yeah.
What kind of memories do you have of them besides the work ethic that they gave you?
Well, also to have fun with it. I mean, you can be serious and work and work and work, but my grandfather was also, he had a good sense of humor. And he used to, I tell this story because it kind of really is pinnacle of how my grandfather was. I was probably 10, and he walked up to the edge of the pond, and he looked at the pond, and he pointed like he wanted to show me something, and I walked close to the pond to see it. And then he's like, "Do you see it?" Then he pushed me into the pond, and he goes, "I didn't tell you to get that close." And that was his way of playing around with you, and it was a real hot day, so it kind of felt good that you were in the pond. But he was a real jokester on those kind of things, and he made working down at the farm fun.
Well,
so
that is nice.
He showed that you could work hard and have fun at the same time.
Well, that is nice. And do you feel like your grandfather singled out any one of your cousins, or did you all feel like you were equally treated by
nope,
your grandfather?
We were all treated the same. He had this little thing when he'd go into the feed store. He would take one of the kids with him, and he always told all the people that were there, because a lot of guys would play cards and hang out at the feed store. And he'd say, "Yeah, this is my grandson, Henry." And they'd all look at him, "Well, that ain't the same kid you brought in the other day, and you said his name's Henry." Grandpa's like, "Yep, his name's Henry, too." Well, he used to call all of us Henry around his friends, just to kind of, I don't know whether it was to make fun of us or make fun of them, but anytime we would go in there, it's like, "Yep, this is my grandson, Henry." And the funny thing is, none of us was really named Henry. It was just his way of joking.
And what memory do you have most of your grandmother?
I don't have a whole lot, actually. My grandmother was a little different. She was a very serious person.
And you said she was Irish.
No, she was an Odell. That's on my dad's side. She was Odell. And
what does Odell mean?
I guess that's Irish or Scottish or something. She was an Odell.
Okay.
And Letha Odell was her name. Florence Odell was her name. And we just call her Granny. And heck of a cook. The woman, she never used a recipe book, but she could cook like crazy. And every morning, we'd all get up before we would go out and do our chores. She'd make these little bitty cinnamon rolls. And oh, my lands, were they so good. I'd love to have some of those. And she'd make them fresh, and then we'd go do our thing. And she taught all the girls how to cook, she taught them how to sew. The neat thing was she taught the girls how to make like Barbie doll clothes and how to make G.I. Joe clothes. We had G.I. Joes, you know, as little kids, and she'd make cowboy outfits and different things for them instead of army stuff. She was very good. In fact, she later went on to teach seamstry, which is sewing, at Job Corps in Excelsior Springs. Now, that was her deal. She was very good with a sewing machine.
Nice. Is there any particular event that you remember most about your siblings growing up and in your home with your parents? Maybe the holidays, birthday celebrations, anniversaries, deaths in the family, anything that stands out that you'd like to share and make sure that generations from now can go back and listen to your recording?
Well, I remember my kids, or my oldest brother. He was, like I say, he's 12 years older than me. I'm kind of at the end. I was kind of an afterthought. And my oldest brother was concerned about being drafted into the Vietnam War. And they were always talking about their numbers. You know, what was their numbers? And like I said, he became a cook because he volunteered to go in the Navy so that he wouldn't be drafted in the Army. But he wanted to serve, but he didn't want to get drafted. And he thought the best place to serve and be safe was to volunteer for submarine school. And so he did, and we were so proud of him. We went up to Great Lakes when he graduated from submarine school, and then all of a sudden, we didn't see him for 6 months. He was underwater for 6 months at a time. He's in a submarine for 6 months at a time. He was in when they were converting diesels over to nuclear subs. So we were kind of nervous about him being on a nuclear sub. Now we know that they're very safe, but at the time, he didn't know. But he really was concerned about the Vietnam War. He was concerned about young people getting drafted for a war that he didn't really understand. And he would talk a lot with my other brother and I about that, and how he was very very concerned about the war. But yet he knew that he was going to have to serve, whether he was going to serve on his own or if he was going to serve by being drafted. And so he went ahead and enlisted, and like I said, he did his time in the submarine underwater.
Do you remember your parents sharing in conversations how concerned they were about your brother being in the service, being on the submarine?
Yes. Well, not only the submarine, my father, like I said, he was drafted and fought in the Korean War, and he was very concerned about the draft. The draft for the Korean War changed my dad's life traumatically, and he was concerned that that would have the same effect on us boys, you know, if this war went on. So he knew that by being in control yourself, whether you volunteer and you do it or you get drafted, it really has a different meaning for the war. If you get drafted, you're probably looking for a way to get out because you don't want to be there. But if you enlist, then you want to be there, and you take responsibility a little differently.
So it's a mindset.
It is a mindset. And my dad was real serious about, you know, you have to be in control of your decisions. And so that's why Mike, he went in and enlisted instead of waited to be drafted.
Good. I know that you're married. You want to tell us a little bit about your bride and how you two met?
Oh, I have a great bride. My wife is awesome. We had moved away for a couple of years. My dad took a job in Sedalia, and when we moved back to Liberty, when they opened Liberty Hospital, he was a maintenance man for Liberty Hospital. All of a sudden, I go from a little country school to a really large school in Liberty. I went from a school, we lived in a town called Otterville, and I had 8 kids in my class. And we moved back to Liberty in 9th grade, where there's 2,000 kids at the school, and it was kind of large, scary. And I met this girl, this little redhead, and her name was Debbie Whitman, and we hit it off, and I pretty much dated my high school sweetheart. We dated through all the way through junior high and high school, and we graduated in May and got married in August.
Wow. You were sure.
I was.
You were sure.
And we've been married ever since, getting ready to celebrate our 39th year.
So did you and Debbie open your home here in Liberty?
No, when we first got married, we lived for a couple months in a friend's basement here in town, and then our first place was a apartment in Gladstone. We lived there about 8 months, and my cousin told me about a house 2 doors down from him in Excelsior Springs, and he says, you really ought to come be our neighbor, and rest is history. I went and bought a house there, and that's where we lived, and I was living there when I went in the service.
Oh, wow. So your bride was here.
She was here the whole time, yeah.
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 So then you started a family.
Started a family. I got two sons. They're 13 months apart. It's kind of like raising twins. I got two great guys. They have adopted the same work habits that we have. They're very successful in what they do. One of them is a nurse. He's an ICU nurse. And the other one is a national sales rep for a banking equipment company. I'm very proud of them. The only thing is their jobs have moved them around the country, and right now they're both on the West Coast, so I don't get to see them as often. But both of them have strived to move up the ladder in their professions, and they've done that quite well. They're good guys.
Well, I think they come from a solid background. That helps, too, the foundation.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, let's touch a little bit on religion.
Okay.
I know that you and Debbie both have a church.
We do.
Is this been a religion that you and Debbie have had all your married life?
Yes. In fact, my wife was actually going to church. She was actually part of the reason I went to church, but not fully. It was more of my grandmother. There's a little town just, I guess it'd be east of us here, called Mosby, Missouri. And my grandmother was from there, and she got cataracts and couldn't drive. And so when I was 16, my mom, she made me, I didn't want to do it, but she made me drive my grandmother to church. Well, I knew that Debbie was going to church, and so I asked her, I says, hey, instead of going to your church, why don't you come with me? Well, I take my grandmother to church, and she graciously said yes. And so church has always been a big part of our life. And when I was 18 years old, I had been going to this little church, listening to this pastor, because my grandmother, like I said, she made me go. And one day after Sunday school, the pastor asked me, he says, is everything okay? And I says, not really. I think I need this guy you keep talking about. And he led me to Jesus right there in between services. Now, he was supposed to go preach because he just taught Sunday school. And I had all these questions and stuff, and he told me, he says, they can wait. And he and I, we held up church for a while. But he led me to the Lord, and it's been a constant walk ever since.
That's a great story.
And my kids were raised in church, and we've always been very active in the church. We've never really been pew sitters. We've always been very involved, either it's in ushering or different things. My wife has taught Vacation Bible School. We've taught Sunday school. At one time, I was actually a drama minister on staff at a church, and currently I have a bunch of men that I have a ministry with once a month on Thursday nights. So it's something that has been very ingrained in me, and it's something that I'm not ashamed of and something I share with others with.
Well, good. That's nice to hear. That's understandable. I'm not surprised. Not surprised, though. You talked about your father's parents, mm-hmm. your mother's parents.
My mother's parents were actually coal miners. They lived in Mosby. And at one time, Mosby was a very booming town. There was five coal mines around Mosby. At one time, Mosby actually had a grocery store, two gas stations, and three banks. It was a very, very busy little community, and it was all based around coal. When the state of Missouri decided that the coal in Missouri had too much sulfur in it, and they shut down all the coal mines, well, that's pretty much killed Mosby, Missouri, because that whole town was around that.
I didn't realize.
Well, my grandparents stayed in Mosby. My grandfather had five daughters. Okay, I had four aunts, and my mom was one of them. And actually, my mom was the middle daughter. And my grandfather, he took on the role of taking care of the city. He was actually in charge of making sure that the roads were in good shape and different things. When the war broke out, because he had so many daughters, he was exempt. He did not have to serve. He tried to serve.
So we're talking about the 1940s?
Yeah, we're talking, well, in World War II.
Two, okay.
In World War II, he tried to serve in World War II, and he couldn't serve because he had five daughters, and they wouldn't let him. So most of the men in Mosby that left and went to war, my grandfather kind of took care of them. Also, my grandfather, unfortunately, when the Western Union would bring announcements, they were given to my grandfather, and he had to go deliver them. That was part of his job there in Mosby.
So would you say your grandfather was the mayor?
Nope, he was just the maintenance guy. He took care of the streets, took care of making sure snow got plowed. He made sure that, you know, street lights got fixed. He just kind of took care of the town. That was his job. He also worked on the WPA, if you remember the WPA projects. And they would build roads and bridges and things through government projects. And so he'd work on those and take care of the town. And he kind of, because he knew everybody in town, they kind of, I guess they didn't want to do that job, and they would give it to my grandfather, and he would go give bad news, unfortunately.
So who was in charge of the town?
Different people. They had a mayor. They had, you know, kind of like any other city, but he was kind of like your public works guy for the city. But Mosby, they were so small, it wasn't a paid job. You didn't get paid. It was, you did it because you wanted to serve your community.
Wow, talk about it. Did they name some roads or streets after your grandfather?
Nope.
Have you petitioned so that you can get one of these roads named after your grandfather?
No. Unfortunately, Mosby's going through a real transition right now, and it's been bought out by FEMA, and they're actually tearing all the houses down. Mosby will cease to exist in the next few years.
Well, that is sad. That is very sad.
Yeah, it's a big piece of my history that's going to be gone. At one time, I was cousins or something related to probably half the town of Mosby at one time, but they've all moved out. I have no family down there anymore.
And were there pictures taken before FEMA came in and started leveling the town, so to speak?
I'm sure there was. I don't know where they're at. But
library? Yeah.
They don't have a library. Excelsior may have some records on it because it's in the Excelsior School District.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That is sad. I'm learning a lot. What was the happiest moment of your life, Dan? What would you say was the happiest moment of your life?
Probably Christmas. I was in probably the third grade, so I don't know what's at 10, mm-hmm. something like
about.
That. I had seen on TV, I liked G.I. Joes, I thought they were cool, and there was a Jeep, a big Jeep that had a rocket launcher that I had talked about, and I thought it was really neat. And that Christmas morning, underneath the tree, Santa Claus brought me my Jeep for my G.I. Joe and a rocket launcher, and it's the only toy I ever remember that I really wanted, and I got it, and I played with that thing forever. It was like the neatest day ever. It was just cool. It was that Christmas morning that when I think of Christmas, it always goes back to that day.
That day.
Yeah.
What would you say was the saddest moment in your life?
The day my mother passed away.
That was hard for you.
It was hard for me. My mom and I had a rocky relationship. We fought over different things. My mom was an alcoholic, so we had issues. But yet, there was always love there. It was never that type mm-hmm. of thing. But there was a bonding in the struggle. And even though we would fight on things because of the fact that we always cared for each other and loved each other, mm-hmm. it seemed like, not that we were both fighters per se, but in that fighting, we grew very close. And the last 10 years of her life, she came to know the Lord, she quit drinking, and we got real, real close. So the fighting became less and less and became more and more loving. And I just wish that I would have had the same mom that my kids had for a grandmother. She was just fantastic with my kids. And when she passed away, it was a big void. And I think for often even now.
So your boys, she lived long enough for your boys to remember their grandmother.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay. She died in 99. Okay. She wanted so bad to see the year 2000. She just knew that it was going to be a big celebration around the world, which it was. And actually, on New Year's Day, the year 2000, many people were worried about Y2K and everything shutting down. I actually had a very sad day because I was thinking of all the things my mother missed that she is wanting to see.
Mm-hmm. Who was the most important person in your life?
It's a tough one because I've had a few.
Mm-hmm. That's what I hear.
Probably one of the people who really set my path was a guy by the name of Don Ahlens. He was my first employer when I got out of the service when I was a young man, and he treated me like one of his own kids. But he was one of those men that always spewed wisdom. He owned an electrical company, and there was 23 of us that worked for him, and he treated us all like his kids. But he would take time to work with each one of us on job sites, and he would always... He's just one of those like grandfatherly type people that always wanted to give wisdom on something. And most of the time it had nothing to do with the job you were doing. It was about life. And he was really into sharing life and what it meant to be a man. He was always speaking to us about how to treat our wives, because our whole crew was all men. And he had a great relationship with his wife, and he would always talk to us about how you treat your wife and how you treat your girlfriends and how you do that. He was a really good man, and he influenced a lot of my thinking and things of life. He's real good. My dad was good on those kind of things, but my dad wasn't much of a talker. So dad was more of... He would show you things by how he did things versus telling you. And Don was really about telling you, you know, hey, this is why you should do this. And this is about feelings and how to make your marriage strong and how to treat your wives and girlfriends the way they need to be treated.
So that kind of leads me to my next question. What are the most important lessons you learned in life?
To treat others like you want to be treated, but the key to it all really is to love people even if you don't agree with them. We all walk this walk where we have to walk our own path, but our path is no better than the next man's. So never look down on them. Their path could change, your path could change, but always be there and show love to everyone you meet. And to take every situation for face value and to work through things not with emotion but with facts and to see who the real person is that you're talking to, because a lot of times we all put up fronts, but it's good to look past them and see who the person really is. You may find there's a pretty cool person in there.
Exactly. How would you like to be remembered, Dan?
Honest, caring, and loving. And full of integrity. That's how I want to be remembered.
Do you have any regrets?
Of course, we all have regrets.
Is there any one that you regret it and you were able to rectify?
Yes. But it's not really a story I can share.
I understand. So what do you feel your future holds for you?
I hope my future holds a legacy where people can say that, you know, hey, I knew this guy and it's something I want to strive for, much like Don Ahlens did for me. I just want to pass that on. He kind of set the example of how to leave a legacy, and I hope to leave one myself.
Great. Is there anything we haven't covered that you'd like to share that you wanted to be recorded for future generations to hear?
Serving your country is more than just saying, hey, I want to go join the service. Serving your country can be done without a uniform. Serving your country really is about giving of your time and energy to make the place that you call home better for everyone around you, not just yourself. So many times when you're a military person, you're willing to sacrifice your own life for things. You need to be willing to sacrifice your time and energy back at home, around the people that you live with, people that you work with, people that you love, and do the same thing to protect and to honor your community just as you did when you were wearing a uniform. And I find that serving a community is so much bigger than myself, and it makes it such an honor to serve those people. And I think everyone should put their name on a ballot. I think every person should go down and stand up for a cause, and I think every person should have the right to say what they feel and not look down on others, for we're all entitled to our own opinions.
Well, thank you very much for your time today.